today I will be presenting with our new student and college-age pastor, Zach Fox. Welcome, Zach, if you would. And the question we are going to ask and answer this morning, this question, how do we cure ourselves from the sin, the hidden sin that is so blinding for Christians? How do we cure ourselves of the sin we are all blind to? That's where we're going to focus today.
Yeah, so like you said, my name is Zach. It's good to be here with you guys this morning. It's kind of cool to be up here. Usually I'm down on the other side of the church with the junior hires. I got brought on here as a youth pastor a couple months ago. So it's pretty cool. I've been enjoying my time here. I'm not actually from this area. I'm from Southern California. Do I have any fellow Southern Californians out here? Couple? Okay, my people. How's it going? Yeah, but it's been going good up here. I was raised a Christian. I was raised in the church. I was a PK. Didn't give myself that title. It just means pastor's kid. My dad was a pastor growing up. He's a senior pastor, kind of like Pastor Scott, which is really interesting because my dad and Pastor Scott, you guys actually go back.
Yep.
You guys know each other like 20 years back. So that was actually really cool when we found that out. Got baptized when I was 10 years old. And, you know, my whole faith journey hasn't always been this pretty, you know, smooth sailing ride. It's definitely been a journey is one word for it. And God's definitely has had his hand in my life. And there was really one point God really had to step in and really change my thinking about who I was and who I thought I was going to be. And, you know, before God had to do that in my life, it kind of seemed like life kind of did that to me on its own. And I don't really know why I'm about to share with you guys what I'm about to share. It's kind of one of those deep diary moments that if you were to write something in your diary and you read that and you go, oh my gosh, why did I write that? Let's go ahead and just close that, put that in a safe, put it in another safe, and put that in another safe and just hope no one ever reads that. So it's kind of one of those stories for me. So whatever, I'm sharing it with you guys here this morning. When I was just 5 years old, and I was literally 5 years old, my parents told me that I would come up to them and I would tell them that I wanted to be a rapper. Like, you know, like, yo, what to do? Like, yeah, like a rapper. How I even knew what a rapper was at 5 years old, I have no idea. That's beside the point. But at 5 years old, I started telling them I wanted to be a rapper. And it was around that age, too, I started to really fall in love with basketball. I still love basketball to this day. I'm a Lakers fan, huge Lakers fan. Any Lakers people up this way? A couple you got? One? All right. Hey, we're on the comeback. We're coming back.
Bruce?
Long as you're not a Clipper fan, we're cool. So, so I still love basketball. So I was at really young, like 5 years old, I was telling my parents I wanted to be a rapper and a basketball player. And I don't remember telling them this next part. I'm guessing I was only 5 years old. I probably started noticing who were the really popular basketball players, and I started really noticing who were the really popular rappers on TV, and then I started noticing myself, and I started noticing I looked a little different than these people I wanted to become. And so I started telling my parents that I really wanted to be African-American. I told them I wanted to be black at 5 years old, and like I said, it's reason why it's interesting is at just such a young age, at 5 years old, I started having a real trouble of are having a conflict of who I was and who I wanted to become. And, you know, I'm not 5 years old anymore. I didn't become a rapper. You know, musical talent definitely never going to let me be the next Eminem and anything like that. You know, I'm not going to find any mixtapes on SoundCloud. But basketball player, what I like to tell myself is if I didn't tear my ACL, so I'd leave it be. But here's my point, is for a lot of us, a lot of the dreams we had as kids have probably changed over time. And more importantly, the motives behind the dreams we had have changed as well. You know, however you want to look at it, money does run the world, right? If you have literally $0 and 0 cents to your name, and you don't have any way to even make even just any cents, you're going to find it very hard to live in modern society. It's just, you know, it's just the way it is. And the world has really been like this for a very, very long time. Time is the whole reason why Jesus talked so much about wealth and money and the priority it can have and the complexities of it. And you know, for us, even here in America, right, we're sold this idea of the American dream, right? This idea of financial security and the good life that comes from this financial security. And for a lot of us, we've bought into wanting to chase after this. And it's not wrong. Financial security isn't wrong. But I think where the problem comes in is that it's this. It's the problem with the American dream is that wherever you're at in life, wherever you're at, it's never where you want to be. Where you're at is never where you want to be. And the problem that comes for us when we come to that place of never being where we want to be and never being content where we're at, is we start to have this conflict in us of who I am and who I want to become. Right? The conflict arises of who I am and who I want to become. And when that happens, I think we become blind to this poisonous sin that finds its way into our lives.
Yeah, that's good. Never where I want to be. How many of you can relate with that? It's just always, I always need to have more. I'm never content just right where I'm at with what God's doing in my life. I always got to have more. That's the temptation of the American dream. Thanks, Dan, for coming up and helping us. This is Dan. He does an incredible job for us. He really does. Not just Dan. There's Jeremy back there. There's Owen, who's in our service and is about to go to the University of Reno. Stand up, Owen. He's been helping us for about 5 years. We love him. And there's also Anthony Edmonds is back there. Those guys just do a ton. We appreciate them. The American dream can be very elusive. Jesus, in the greatest sermon ever preached, and he himself being the greatest preacher that ever lived, is walking through his renewal of the Ten Commandments. We're in the Sermon on the Mount. It's a 10-minute read where God talked about everything in 10 minutes. And Jesus is literally walking through Deuteronomy 5 and Exodus 19. He's walking through the Ten Commandments, especially the last four that relate to our relationships with one another. Last week, he talked about murder. He qualified murder and said, hey, you've heard that it was said, do not murder. If you're even angry at a brother or you say to someone, raka, you've committed murder in your heart. Raka means I don't see you. You don't matter to me. And so what we learned is that mere marginalization of people is a murderous thought where you just don't like people anymore. You don't care for someone anymore. Do not murder. He renewed what it meant to commit adultery. Do not do not look lustfully at someone that's not your spouse, male or female. He said that was adultery. He also talked about marriage, and he talked about avoiding lying. He said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. He talked about loving your enemies. Do not steal, give to the one who asks of you. He qualifies all of these. And then in the sermon, he launches into this piece on what we believe is the secret sin, the hidden sin that none of us really talk about very often. And what we believe it is it's this idea of do not covet. Do not covet. Covetousness is the sin of the eye. Covetousness is the sin of the eye. And it's that one sin that no one thinks they have. There's always somebody else that doesn't manage their money well. It's always somebody else who's always wealthier. I don't have a problem with covetousness. Tim Keller, pastor out of Manhattan, New York, great thinker, says this: you know you struggle with covetousness if you disdain the rich. You know you struggle with covetousness if you look down on the poor. It can go either way. And so we want to talk about coveting because we believe coveting has the potential of actually creating more worry, anxiety, and fear in your life. And so we want to answer this question: how do we cure ourselves of the sin we are all blind to? Now, many of you might think, hey, this does not relate to me. Let's let Ben Stiller talk to us a little bit about coveting. Check this out.
Why didn't you tell me? I should have told you. That's the thing. I just should have just told you, but I don't know what happened. I felt guilty or something. I was just so wrapped up in the envy that I felt for everything you had. I mean, it's true what they say. It's like a little green monster that comes out and it just poisoned my head. I mean, and by the way, you did nothing wrong. I mean, you did nothing wrong. You just, you followed your dream. You did what you wanted to do. And I was always saying, don't do it. And you did it. And it worked. I mean, it worked. Look, you built a house, right? That's all you did. You built a house. I mean, it's a big house. I mean, it's a really big house. It's a large house. It's gigantic, Nick. It's the White House. You built the White House across the street, and we're in the shadow of it. I mean, literally, every day at 4 o'clock, we're in the shadow of it. You know, and that's not your fault. I mean, you wanted to be friends still, and you didn't want to move, and I love that. I mean, that's such a, you know, it's coming from such a good place, but it was just, I mean, it really was getting to me, because every day I'd have to look at you and see you with all of this stuff, you know, buy the yellow Lamborghini that goes 500 miles an hour. Have a bowling alley next to your bedroom. If I could do it, I would have done it. Everybody should have a merry-go-round. Of course you should have a merry-go-round. Jealousy every day, and it was just chewing me up. I mean, your kid's playing the concert piano, my kid's banging trash cans. And I don't think that has anything to do with the money. I think that's just his musical ability, but that's a whole other thing. And you just gave to us, Nick. I mean, you gave, and you're so generous. And what am I going to give you? I gave you tube socks for Christmas last year. That's not going to work.
I like the socks.
You gave us so much, the coffee machine. It's beautiful, giant, rocket ship-sized coffee machine. And Debbie loved the coffee. I'll tell you something. I never tasted it. I've been wanting to tell you that for a long time. I mean, it's that bad. I can't even tell you I haven't tried the coffee. Like, it's going to make me feel better about myself that I won't drink your coffee. And you gave our kids flan. And then all of a sudden, my son's going, Daddy, Daddy, where's the flan? I want the flan. And I just want to... It felt like a dagger in my heart, the flan, every time you'd request flan. And it just made me feel little. I felt like a little man who didn't like flan. That's what I felt like, Nick. And the horse was great, Nick. Of course you should have a horse. Does it have to be a white horse that you come galloping up on and it neighs and it makes the whole thing? Of course, make it a beautiful white horse that I think on...
All right. Has anyone, would you admit, sometimes comparison is a temptation? Raise your hand if you're like, okay, I get. This is what we think can be the sin that we're so easily blinded by. And we believe that Jesus is going to give us some real tangible ways that we can free ourselves from this and really enjoy a worry-less life, a life that's fully dependent upon God's grace in our lives, his generosity outside of what we can do. That's where we're headed today. How do we cure ourselves of the sin that we are also blind to? This is what Jesus said. We're just continuing in the greatest sermon ever preached, the Sermon on the Mount, in chapter 6, in verse 19. Jesus says, do not, and what does he say? Do not store up for yourselves treasures on where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For wherever your treasure is, there your will be also. And so what we think Jesus is directing us to do in our life is to focus on heavenly treasures instead of stockpiling. Does that make sense? Stockpiling is this idea that I want more for me. We heard this week that there is a grandmother at Bayside at Adventure. That's the former Adventure campus off Stanford Ranch Road. There's a grandmother there. I think I might know her. I'd be curious. But she said this recently to one of the senior pastors. She said, as I get older, my son, he's a doctor, and my daughter, she's a lawyer. They're waiting someday to inherit all my money. They're not getting any. She says, I'm giving it all to the kingdom of God. Loved that. Because there is this temptation to always think about more for ourselves. And she's saying, I'm giving it away. And I have a friend like this. He's planned, he's going to leave some for his kids, but he's planned to actually see his financial legacy continue after his life and continue to be a significant distribution to missionaries throughout the world. Here's what's happening. Focus on heavenly treasures instead of stockpiling. Here's why this is important. If you're only focused on stockpiling here on earth, what's going to happen is that your heart is going to follow that treasure. It's going to be all that you think about. And it can become a very covetous, unsatiable, unfulfilled desire because you never have enough, like the American dream. You always want to be someplace else than where you're at. And so what we want to suggest is that what Jesus is teaching is this piece. This is one step you can take that I guarantee you will make a difference in your life. Make room for what we call the sea life. The sea life. And the sea life is putting God first in your finances, putting God first in your financial plan. Now, even as I go here, I want to tell you, I believe that Jesus does not teach that you have to give a certain amount. I believe that you're free to give how you want to the kingdom. And I would even add the only qualifier in the scriptures about your stockpiling for heaven, only qualifier is this: you need to do it with joy. All right? So if you're not happy about giving, notify your face, put a smile on it, and give with joy. Here's the deal. A to B life is what I can rationally imagine today and where I'm, A to B life is my plan. That's where I'm at today and where I hope to be when I'm a certain age, 50, or where I hope to be for you when you're 30, or where you hope to be when you're 60 or 80 or 100, okay? Or 110, maybe some of you will live that long. That's my plan, okay? That's A to B. That's what I can imagine happening. That's the ideal plan, okay? B to C life enters a new variable in your finances. B to C life says what God might do beyond my plan. It's the God factor. It's where you say, like the patriarchs, you say, hey, God, I'm going to start giving here because I believe that when I give, I'm simply acknowledging that every gift I have is from you. Very recently, and I shared with Zach, I wonder if I should share this story, and he thought, yes. Very recently, Melissa and I went on a great vacation. It was really fun, just about, actually, and my sons, about 7 days. It was an expensive little nugget. We shared it with my brother, but we rented an incredible beach house. It was awesome. But before we left, Melissa and I felt compelled. Let's let God know we believe everything we have is from him. That this is not our own work. He's been very generous with us. And so we decided we're going to give a little extra before we go on vacation just to let him know, hey, we don't think, you know, we're the best thing since sliced bread. We're lucky to be able to enjoy such a nice getaway on the beach. You know what happened? Our little sea life experience at the end of the vacation, Melissa was like, now we're going to stay an extra day, aren't we? I'm like, do you want to? It's kind of expensive to rent a place down here. Do you want to? Yeah, let's stay another day. I'm like, yes, ma'am, we'll stay an extra day. And she thought about it a little more, and she said, you know, maybe we should just go home early. We'd save some money, wouldn't we? I'm like, we would save a lot of money. Let's do that. And she said, all right, why don't we'll go home early. Boy, we saved hundreds of dollars. And I just kept my composure. I didn't want to overreact. But I think that's what sea life is. When you put the Lord first with your finances, some conversations, variables happen in your finances. Bill Hybels describes it this way. Sea life may include variables that you've not calculated. Promotions, job opportunities, inheritances that are all literally the heavens opening up on your behalf. So how do you deal with the sin of the eye? The first step we're saying from Jesus is focus on heavenly treasures rather than stockpiling. And let me just back up for a moment. We had something happen this week that is an example of a heavenly treasure. In the Riobla School District, right now we're partnering with this school to provide backpacks, shoes, and clothes, I think for 500 we're going to hear about later in the service. This is a heavenly treasure. We're bringing hope right here in our Sacramento area. This is what it means to stockpile for heaven rather than for ourselves. Zach?
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. So Jesus, he goes on to say, the next couple of verses, he says, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if the eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate one and love the other, or you will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. I always think it's really interesting how Jesus wraps, he throws that last phrase in there. You can't serve God and money. He paints this, you know, really nice depiction of, you know, the eyes, the lamp of the body, where we're looking is what's going to fill us. And he goes, okay, people, in case you aren't getting it, what I mean here is you can't serve God and money. He just kind of lays it right out there for us. So here's the point we're bringing up right now. Here's what Jesus is saying. It's to focus on heavenly desires over staring and comparing. Focus on heavenly desires over staring and comparing. And what staring and comparing, what we mean by that, is this idea of I want what you have, right? It's this constant looking of this is where I want to be. That's where I should be. That's what I should have. That's what I want to go. This is not where I want to be, but that's what I should have, right? It's Ben Stiller, right? That's who you are when you come to this idea of staring and comparing. When I was first learning to drive, I was 16. I was getting my permit. I got my license when I was 16 and a half. But getting my permit, we had to do things called driving instructing courses where someone comes and picks you up and they teach you how to drive, basically. And so before my first driving instructor lesson, I hadn't really been driving on the roads, obviously, because I didn't have my license or my permit, but I drove in the parking lots a little bit with my dad. And so, you know, I wasn't that experienced. I'd never drove on the roads before. And so for the first lesson, the guy pulls up to my house and I come out and I see him jump out of the driver's seat and he gets into the passenger seat and he goes, all right, jump in. You're going to drive the other kid home. And I was like, what? I've never drove before. And he was like, it's all right. We'll teach you as you go. I was like, oh man. Okay. So we're starting to drive and, you know, I'm trying to be as careful as I can. And, you know, my whole depth perception of like the right side of the car, the other side of the car wasn't quite there yet. And so I was starting to get really nervous. There was people walking, like I was on the right side of the curb. There's people walking on the curb and I didn't want to hit the curbs because that would have been embarrassing. But more importantly, I didn't want to hit any people because I wasn't trying to get vehicular manslaughter in my first lesson. So it was scary. And so what I ended up doing because of that is I ended up just staring at the people walking on the curb. I ended up just staring at the curb as I was driving, because that's what I didn't want to hit. That's what I wanted to avoid. And so I ended up just staring at it, thinking that's what's going to help me not hit them. And so what ended up happening because of that, because that's what I was looking at, naturally, I started just drifting more towards them. So eventually the driving instructor was like, dude, like, come on, you can't, like, you gotta, he's like, don't look that way. He's like, what I want you to do instead is I want you to look at the opposite side of the road. I want you to not to look at where you don't want to go. I want you to look at the other side of the road. I want you to look at the lanes on your left side, look at the middle divider, and look forward of where you should go, and that's where you're going to be able to drive towards. And it was a really good lesson, and I think it's so applicable to kind of life, really. I mean, it's this idea, my mom's told me this before, and I think it just hits the nail on the head of what I'm trying to say here. It's we stare where we steer. We stare where we steer. You know, Jesus, what he's saying here is where we become blind to this idea of covetousness is that what we look at, we want. What we look at, we want. You know, if we're looking at things that we don't want to go towards, we're going to go towards that. If we're looking at things that we want, that's going to pull us away from Jesus, that's the direction our heart and our minds are going to go. So how can we have clarity for this? What is Jesus saying? How we can have clarity in our lives of seeing this for what it is? It's pretty simple. It's look at what Jesus wants. Look at what Jesus wants. And how you can do this in your life, if you've been around here at Adventure for a little bit, it's this, you may have heard this before, but it's this idea of bless, this idea of being a blessing to other people, right? It's waking up, beginning each day with prayer, right? Realizing that each day is a mission. Each day is an opportunity for you to God, for God to place people in your life, for God to do things in your life, for God to put the right people in your life to either speak into you or to speak into other people. But it's just realizing that each day needs to begin with prayer, realizing each day is a mission. And secondly, it's listen. Just listen to the people around you. Maybe listen to the people trying to speak into you. Listen to the people who just want to talk so you can be there to listen to them. And secondly, or thirdly, it's eating, investing. This is just investing in relationships with people, right? Go to dinner when people invite you. Invite people over for dinner. Invite people into your home. Be there just to be there to have relationships with other people. Invest in the relationships with the people around you. And next is serve. Just be there to serve people. Be there to love on people. When people need you, be there to serve for them. Be there to help them. When people are in need, make yourself available to just be there for people. And lastly, a story. Share your story. All right, we've all been through our share of hardships at this point in life. Many of us have been with God to walk us through those hardships, and I can guarantee you whatever those hardships that you've been through, that God has brought you through, there's someone else going through the same situation in the middle of the same thing that you've had to learn on God to get through. And God has brought us through those things because he wants us to be used in those people's story. He wants us to be able to use in those people's lives to maybe get them through it. And that's the way God wants to work in their life, and it's through you. So we have to be willing to share our story with other people. So it's this idea of blessing. How do we know what Jesus wants? How do we begin to see as Jesus sees? Just look to be a blessing to people. Look to be available to people.
Love that. So what you stare at, you steer towards.
What you stare at,
you heard that. Who told you that for the first time?
It's my mom. My mom's told me that. So.
Love that. Moms always have these great sayings, don't they?
Listen to your mom.
Yeah, that's what Jesus wants, isn't it? Jesus continues here. He says, therefore, do not worry. I tell you, do not worry about your life. Wow, is worry not one of the biggest things we deal with as Americans? Don't worry about your life, what you will eat, what you will drink, about your body, about what you're going to wear. And then he says this, is not life more than food? How many of you are like, I'm not sure on that one? Yeah, I got my, I know where I'm headed here in a few minutes. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothes? Okay. I mean, Jesus is begging a question that we have to answer. Is our life more? Are we experiencing more from him? And what he's saying here is this: focus on heavenly pursuits over worrying and hurrying. And what you're going to see here in just a few minutes are all of the ways that God graciously provides for creation, for nature. And what Jesus is trying to teach is that we need to have the same kind of dependence on God to provide for us. It'll help us deal with the coveting that can lead to worry. Worrying and hurrying says this: I want to be safe. I want to be secure. I don't want to have any threats. And that in of itself can create some problems.
Yeah, I mean, as we've been kind of studying this past week, it's been something that's been speaking to me a lot, because I feel like right now, man, I feel like I'm going through it right now. I graduated from college 2 years ago with, you know, those good old joyous student loans. And, you know, it's just this big weight that's on your back until you get them all paid off in, you know, 100 years. And so, it's this pressure. And, you know, when I was getting ready to commit to going into youth ministry, as I felt this is what God was calling me towards, it was a big leap of faith for me, because, you know, no one goes into youth ministry for the money, right? No one goes, I want to be rich, I'm going to be a youth pastor, you know? And, you know, you have to have a different heart behind it. And I felt God calling me towards that. But like I said, it was a big leap of faith knowing that going into it. And before I came out here, up here, I was working two jobs, you know, just to be able to afford rent for the next month. And, you know, it was tough. And, you know, Angelina and I are getting married now in September, which is we're really excited about. But if you know anything about weddings, they're not very cheap, right? And so, you know, it's the average wedding around here goes for, you know, about, you know, $10,000 is an average wedding. And you can do what you can to try and cut costs and whatnot, but, you know, it's still really expensive. And so we're doing what we can to try and help pay for that. And Angelina's with me here this Sunday. If you want to see us out in the lobby, you can stop by and say hey. We're excited to be here. So we're getting married in September. She'll appear officially then. But my point is, she's going to be leaving her good-paying job where she's at now and coming up here without any secure job secured up here. And it's just a lie. You know, if I was to really let this just consume me and fill me with worry about, you know, how am I going to get to this next step? How am I going to get this? How am I going to do that? It's just a lie. And it can be a very, very overwhelming feeling if I was to let it, you know, take over.
If you just sit, I'm getting stressed out just talking about it right now.
Sorry. No, I totally cut the tension there.
But isn't that really what kind of negative visualization can do? And that's what we believe, is that worry is simply negative visualization instead of trusting in what God wants to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. For those of you that have some knowledge of the Bible, Think about that story when the Jews were leaving Egypt and they were in the desert. What did they keep saying to God? God, you just sent us out here to let us die, right? They kept saying that over and over and over again. What they didn't know is that, no, God wanted to give them houses they didn't build, vineyards they didn't plant, wells they didn't dig. That's grace. That's this anticipation of what God wants to do. But our nature is to just sit and analyze and focus and problem solve around what we think is the worst case scenario, right? That's our nature. And so what we want to say is this: hey, let go and hold on to the hand of grace. This is how I dealt with anxiety that I struggled with about, seems like 7 years ago. I was in my late 30s, early 40s. I struggled with anxiety. I mean, I didn't even know what it was. But I think I started thinking about negative things, and it started to make my heart beat fast, and I couldn't breathe as well. And my wife's not compassionate at all. She's like, toughen up. But it just started to bug me. I told Zach, and he thought it was okay to share this. There was one day I had an appointment down on Folsom Boulevard to get my car worked on. I was kind of scared to go down there. It was too far. I know that sounds really like, wow, and you're leading an adventure? Gosh, I'm just telling you, I got way better. I can drive to J Street now. Just kidding. No, but I just learned to deal with it. And I actually went to Kaiser and went to a class, and they told me to, hey, listen to more classical music. And I was like, yeah. And breathe through your nose. And I did all these exercises. And honestly, the big leap for me with stress was starting to visualize, and honestly, not only the Bible helped me with this, but Oprah Winfrey actually gave me a little inspiration. I want a little shout out to her, but I visualized my putting my hand in God's hand and letting go of maybe worst case scenarios and just really trusting him. And it changed everything for me. And it's been a real win for me for probably almost half a decade. But the truth is, when we think about negative things and we focus on them, it can scare us. The other morning, my son and I, Grant, who was up here leading worship this morning, we were both up at 4 for some reason, and he goes out in the garage. He's like, Dad, there's a huge butterfly in our garage. I'm like, a butterfly? I walk out, Grant, that's not a butterfly. That's a bat. Butterflies don't have 6-inch wingspans and look absolutely gross with big old talons on them. It's a bat. He said, Dad, it's not a bat. It's a butterfly. I'm like, oh, go play with the butterfly. He's like, I don't know. He walks up. He's like, okay, Dad, I think it's a bat. And I looked at its little these, and I started thinking about them, you know, kind of just a on my neck. And I started looking at it, and I started freaking out, right? Worry is negative visualization of a worst case scenario. So, anyways, we're both very, you know, very fearless men. We ran in the house, shut the door, and the next morning I opened the side door, and evidently it was gone. Oh, so nice. Anyways, worry can really grip us, and I think Jesus is speaking to a developing world here. Okay, this is pre-modern medicine. This is in the day and age before polio vaccines and smallpox vaccines. This is the day and age before penicillin. These principles have to work for any culture. They're timeless principles on how to deal with worry, which I think can really be a real contagion for our culture. So this is what Jesus says. And what I want you to hear as I read is the hand of God's grace supporting creation and supporting us personally. Take this personal. Here we go. Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap. In other words, they don't work or store away in the barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. That's grace. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? How many of you would say, yeah, we try. We can do an hour, right? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow? They do not labor or spin. They're not working like we try to work. We're some of the hardest working on the planet. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all of his splendor was dressed like one of them. Beautiful flowers. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and gone tomorrow and thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith? You know, really worry is just a lack of faith. As you move and grow in faith, you will have increased stress capacity. It's awesome. It really is fun. Even when bats are in your home. I can't wait. I'm going to have about 5 or 10 in my home here soon. So do not worry saying, hey, what shall we eat or what are we going to drink or what are we going to wear or who's going to hire me or where am I going to find a job? It's not that you sit around and just, you know, wait. You work, but you don't worry. For the pagans, they run after these things. They're running after them. And your heavenly Father knows that you need them. Do you hear that? Your heavenly Father knows what you need. He knows it. But he says, Jesus says this, seek first his kingdom. What's his kingdom? It's the rule of Christ in your heart. He's the king. You let him rule your heart. And his righteousness, his character. You pursue him, his character. And all these things will be given to you as well. Given. You won't even have to work for them. It'll just happen. It'll be God's grace, obviously. Not that you're not working. I'm not encouraging you all to go be sloths. But you wait on God's gift that you didn't earn. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow. You've heard this throughout your life. For tomorrow will worry about itself. Don't borrow worries from tomorrow, my wife says in our home often. And then Jesus says this. This is kind of daunting, kind of eerie. Each day has enough trouble of its own. That's Jesus talking. Each day has enough trouble of its own.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but what I love about what Jesus is reminding us, he's just reminding us just how deeply and how much God really cares about us, about how much he's willing to be with us and willing to protect us and willing to provide for us. And it's just such a great reminder for us to hold on to. Because I don't know, maybe you're coming in here this morning feeling like the struggle is real. Right? Maybe you're feeling like either you're coming in here with maybe feeling like you have $5 in your bank account or you got $5 million in your bank account. You know, the struggle can still be real, right? They say more money, more problems. You know, but I know some of us say we'd rather be crying in a Lamborghini, but still, that's beside the point. The point a little bit. It can be real, and maybe you're coming in here this morning, maybe you're feeling that a little bit, feeling that pressure a little bit, right? Worrying about maybe the job and the money you're making from the job. Right? Maybe worrying about making enough money to provide for your family, worrying about making enough money to get out of all that debt that's been accumulating, worrying about if you're having enough money to put into your savings account, or worrying about having enough money to put into your retirement, worrying about having enough money to get your kids into college. Maybe you're worrying about it. You don't even have kids yet. You could be worrying about when your kids are in college, whether they're going to get out of college and make enough money. You know, it could be, it just could be really anything. And there's just pressures from all around that are going to be trying to sit on you and make you feel that pressure. And you know, those things aren't things to ignore in life, right? We're not saying having a savings account is wrong. We're not saying having a retirement is wrong, but yeah, exactly. But here's the question, you know, where is your security coming from? Right, if you were in all honesty being as frugal as you can with your money, you know, trying to be as wise as you can with your money, but for whatever reason you lost it all at the snap of a finger, how would you handle that? You know, where is your security coming from? Because when your eyes are fixed is where you will go, right? Where you stare, you will steer. And when your eyes are fixed on Jesus, right? Colossians says, set your mind on things above. When your eyes are fixed on Jesus, your whole perspective changes. It's all of a sudden not about where you are and where you should be. It's about where you are is exactly where God wants to start using you, right? We worry about the things we are devoted to. And when our eyes are fixed on Jesus, when our treasure is set with him in heaven, we all of a sudden start to begin to worry about what Jesus worries about, right? Our worry is not anymore about financial security. All those things are good to have. Jesus, we just read here that God does provide for us, but that's not our worry anymore. Our worry is about what Jesus worries about, which is about our relationship with him and about the eternal destination of the people who are around us.
This week, Zach, I got a call from a guy who needed something from me. He doesn't attend Adventure, but he was elevated. He was upset, and we were having a conversation.
I was there, actually.
Yeah, you were. You were. And, you know, as you heard, I think he was on speakerphone, and I didn't tell him you were there. I just realized that. But he was laying into me.
I mean, he was quiet.
He was passionate. And as I'm talking to him, I'm thinking, you know, I'm happy to do what he needs to help. But in my deepest heart, he's someone I've been praying about, that he would open his heart to Jesus. I mean, so I got this guy I've been praying about almost daily, and he is laying into me. It's awesome. It was like, wow. He's concerned
about...
It's kind of fun to watch. What?
It's kind of fun to hear it.
Yeah. I was like, you know, he's concerned about this, and I'm concerned about his future. I want to make certain that his forever is secure. And he has some exposure to Christianity, but he's never really let Jesus in, never really pursued a personal relationship with God through Jesus. I'm hoping that soon we'll have an opportunity to do that. That, to me, is kind of taking your eyes off worldly worries and looking at what Jesus wants us to look at, what really matters. And that doesn't mean I'm not trying to be a good steward or responsible at all. In fact, that game should be elevated. But what really is important is people. People matter. The question we've tried to answer this morning is, how do we cure ourselves from this sin that can so easily blind us? I mean, you know that Facebook and Twitter and Instagram really can be places of traps where you're just seeing the vacations other people are on, the, you know, the photoshopping other people do. It can be really the comparison game. How do you protect yourself? We've said a few things. As it relates to finances, consider the C life, the B2C life. Consider making B2C living a part of what you do. I'm telling you, it's such a joy, really. It's such a joy. And I just want to pause and tell you, we're finishing our fiscal year here at Adventure, and we're at a place we've never been historically. Adventurers have been so generous here. We've never been at this place before. And we're not encouraging you to stop being generous for the next fiscal year, but it's been amazing. We have been able to save 3.5 months of operational savings here. The goal was 3 months, and it's just been a great year. And we give God all the praise for how he's moved in your hearts to be generous. Thank you. We just can't thank you enough. Secondly, we're asking you to look at what Jesus wants and bless. Consider making this BLESS acronym part of your life. Every day, God, how do you want to use me? What do you want to do through me? And then finally, let go and hold on to the hand of grace. If anxiety is an issue for you, let go and hold on to him. I want to read this service to you from the psalm that's all about comparison and coveting that spoke to my heart as an early 20-something. Here it is, Psalm 73. Asaph is the author, and this is what he says. When my heart was grieved and my spirit was embittered, he was disdaining the poor. When my heart was grieved and my spirit was embittered, I was senseless and ignorant, a beast before you. I was angry. And then he says this, yet I am always with you. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel. And afterward, you will take me into glory. He had a heavenly vision. Whom have I in heaven but you? The earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart, they may fail. My body's going to give out. But God, you are the strength of my heart. You are my portion forever. You hear him? Those who are far from you will perish. You destroy all those who are unfaithful to you. And this is the prayer I want you to consider today. But as for me, it is good to be near God. Yeah, it's good to be near God. I've made the sovereign Lord my refuge. I will tell of all of your deeds. I'm not going to be in comparison. You know what I want? I want his hand. If I've got his hand, everything's good. It all works out.